Welcome to the Trend Detection Podcast, powered by Sensei, an industry leader in using AI to drive scalable and sustainable asset performance and reliability. For this three-part series, I'm joined by Rob Hienekamp, CEO at Endowant Solutions, to discuss the rise of equipment as a service as a concept and why it's set to make a big impact over the next few years. In the third and final episode of this series, Rob explains why he set up Endowant to disrupt the industrial IoT space, and how manufacturers can start implementing equipment as a service in their organization. No, I was going to ask, it's interesting you mentioned, because we've talked very much about the joint solution, but what's behind the inspiration behind you at 360 and Endowant, you know, to be in existence? What were you seeing at the time which sort of inspired the setup of the company?
So we were a CRM-centric solution, actually service business since 2007. When you're on a company, services company, the challenge is a little bit, so what's your forecast look like, right? Because it's up and down and you can't tell. And if there's a downturn, you have challenges. How do you get the revenue coming in? Because companies may cut on those pretty much the first thing, right? So I wanted to be more of a product company. So we have predictable forecasting, right? Mm. And so our solution is a SaaS-based solution and it's subscription-based. So we have 5-10-year contracts with our customers and it feeds back into valuation too, right? But my first goal was to make this company, make Endowant more predictable from a forecastable perspective, from a revenue perspective. And that happened with Duet Enterprise, which is our solution to integrate ERPs to Salesforce, any ERP to Salesforce. But then at that point, it's like, well, I don't want to sit still. I don't want to wait because people are going to catch up potentially. You never know. But if, you know, not moving forward means there's competition that's going to pass you and you're going to have potential challenges down the road. So I'm always looking for new solutions, and new solutions in this case was an IoT solution. It wasn't necessarily a natural fit if you think about what we've been doing. We've been doing CRM implementations, right? But there is an extension. So what we now have jointly is kind of an interesting one. The concept started a little differently, but with what you have now together is morphed into something that I don't think anybody ever anticipated. I at least didn't when I came up with the idea that I was thinking about. And, you know, we're going further than that. So now we have a predictive predictive solution. It's working. People love it. And the concept needs to be brought to market. But we're not sitting still. I don't want to just wait. So my thought already has gone past this. So we have this great. Now we need to sell it. It's almost like, okay, we're there. Now we need to sell it, right? But you know, also talking about sustainability. Sustainability is a big thing in the world, right? Well, mainly in Europe, starting to pick up in the United States. So we're now working on a sustainability solution where we capture the information on asset and not just on a location. It's not like, okay, this location has X problems with, I don't know, carbon footprint. We're looking at a solution to monitor individual assets for their, basically for how sustainable are they, right? Let's use automotive again. Automotive, they have, 50-some assets to manufacture a car. You're not going to be able to make it completely sustainable, right? That's just that the process just is not that. But you can identify what the top 15 problems are or whatever the top X is and chip away at those. Well, when you look at an automotive plant and an assembly line, the one that comes to mind as the number one problem is the paint cabin, right? And so what we're looking to do is we want to monitor those individual assets for carbon footprint, for kilowatt hours, there are six main gases that you need to measure. And we're just going to then say, okay, these are the top violators and what needs to happen? Do we need to change an engine? Do we need to change whatever it is, right? But that's our current process. That's our add-on to the most recent product. And we see a huge interest from automotive. So in the automotive market, what we see is there's a sustainability requirement, right? So big companies in the market are basically telling their supply chain, you will have to be sustainable. And if you're not sustainable for an extended period of time, we're going to cut you from the supply chain, which is a big deal if you do get the cut, right? You don't want that. So what we now can do is the car manufacturer, when they decide and negotiate contracts with their supplier, they will talk sustainability. One thing that then you need to add is we're going to measure your assets as part of the agreement. Those assets being measured give you the real data. And that can give the automotive company a tool to say, you know what, you have been sustainable, you're in good shape. Or if you're not, they're going to tell you, hey, you're not sustainable. Here are the X things you need to fix. And you have 6 months or a year, whatever the term is. And if you're not sustainable, now we're going to cut you from the supply chain because you're not meeting our requirements. It takes away the guessing game, right? I mean, everybody can create an Excel. Yeah, we're sustainable, right? But it's not real data. And so what we look to do is go to market with that type of solution and then say, well, we're going to make your supply chain sustainable. Now, we can't go all the way to ESG scope 3 because that type of detail is something that is not measurable. But ESG scope 1 and 2 is measurable. And so that's what is the next joint solution is going to be. So, yeah, so we keep evolving. So it goes back to your question, what was endowments and how did it happen? We morphed from a service business into a product company. And when there's some things that I see in the market, I get some thought about it. Then I tell our product team that I have this thought. And you know Rita, my wife, she tells me first, no, don't do that. Not again. And then 2 weeks later, she's like, oh, this is cool, because she did a lot of research on it. And so this is how we built these new solutions. I see some stuff in the market or a need, and then the development team looks at it, we looks at it, and she's like, oh, cool, cool. And then they rebuild it. Hmm. So, yeah, that's how we're structured. So
I think it's quite interesting, actually, because it maybe it's ironic in a way, because you've moved from a service business to a product business. And what we've been talking up to now is moving from a product centric business to a service business. So I like the irony and the of all that. But it's a really interesting story. I didn't know yeah. that story at all about endowments. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So let me clarify that. So the challenge of service business is in our case, I mean, here's the thing, it's people, right? And people are an expensive asset, and they leave and they move and they come in. And so it's a very dynamic process. With having a product to support manufacturing distributors, we move to more of a revenue stream from product service, from a SaaS product, right? So you're right. For our business, we're moving away from sales, from services, we're moving into product, but for a good reason. I would say that manufacturing services is more that you already have an asset, so they can't go anywhere. Your customers are basically a captive audience, if you will, right? So the services attached to the asset are actually something you want to capture, and that means that generates revenue. But it's an intriguing point, Niall. I did not think about it that way.
Exactly. Yeah, it just dawned on me that actually we're flipping it in reverse. But it's been really interesting to learn the endowment's journey, because maybe as much as we've worked together quite closely, I didn't know the origins of the company maybe as well as I should have done. So very interesting. I wanted
never
to
learn every day. You know?
Exactly. I wanted to touch on actually. So we've talked about, you know, how some of this stuff, you have to have a vision, has to be quite far in the future. But for people listening who are maybe in a, you know, forward thinking mode, and they're really keen to implement this, I mean, what are the not even the challenges? So how easy is it to implement this joint EAS solution?
Yeah, who thought about that, EAS?
Exactly.
So it's going to take time, right? But you can start out with not changing your business model necessarily, right? You don't need to start with the EAS model just because we already talked about its journey. You don't want to jeopardize your business. And so what we would do as a start is we can make your assets smart, right? We talked about it before. That's the first step. And maybe you're happy with that, and that's all you need to do, right? You may not want to change to an EAS model, but we feel that the end customer in the market, we understand, we find in the market that there's a need for that. The example that we sometimes use is, so you drive a car, right? When you drive your car, you don't necessarily need to know everything about it, right? You don't need to know how the engine works. You have no idea. You don't need to care. It's not your challenge. You don't need to worry about it, because if something breaks, you go to the dealership. How is it that we have end customers that have assets and they need to maintain themselves? That we see that, right? Why is that? Now you need to be an expert on the product that manufactures your product. How about you change that game and make that the responsibility for the manufacturer and distributor for that product, right? So we see that. And so as far as the journey, is it complicated? Technically, no. Technically, we can, as soon as we have access to assets through internet, to whatever the options that we have, and we can monitor, that's where the journey starts. That won't take too much time. There's of course the learning capabilities on the Sensei side that won't take too much to actually build a baseline. I would say in 3 months you can have, or less than 3 months, you can have a really good baseline of an asset group, and then you can start adding to it with different asset groups or different things that you want to start measuring. So the start for this is not too complicated, not the long journey, but it's a start, right? And so that's what we see. Now, we talked about it before, the journey is going to take time, because the first step is not going to change the way you organize as a business. You're not changing anything financially either. But when you go to EAS, there's definitely an impact. Your financials are going to change. You're not going to get that upfront $2 million revenue. It's going to be spread around for years. And one more thing about EAS that we find to be very intriguing. So an asset from our customer base generally is there for 10, 20, 30 years, right? Depending on the asset type. Now, let's say we go with the EAS model where a service business distributor company holds the note, is the owner of the asset. It's on their books and they generate revenue based on a predictive maintenance contract and the output-based contract. After 7 years, that asset is no longer in the books. It's economically written off. It's no longer of value. So it's on the books for $0. But the asset continues to generate revenue because the predictive maintenance contract, as well as the output-based contract, are continuing to generate revenue for that company who holds the note. And that could be 30 years. So after 7 years, it's a economically useless asset. From a financial point, it's written off. It's basically depreciated. But you continue to generate revenue for another 15 or so years, if not more. Which is intriguing, because it's a zero cost to you on your books. You don't see it on the books, yet you get revenue from it. That's a whole other piece of the EAS puzzle that is going to be that's handled. And it's an intriguing one from a financial perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And I was going to ask actually about, is there particular industries that are more sort of ready, either ready or more equipped, to use a better term, but more equipped to sort of implement a solution like this out of the bat?
Well, here's the thing. When we talk to some of our partners, big companies like the Siemens, right? It's interesting because what we have jointly is almost applicable to every industry, right? As soon as something is managed created, an asset is created that makes stuff, that actually qualifies. Now, everything we do every day, touch every day, everything is manufactured. So everything came from an asset that made a table, a monitor, a door, a window, whatever. Everything we touch is basically manufactured. So manufacturing world industry is a major industry, right? So where do we focus on? So we focus on the manufacturer of an asset, right? A company that makes a machine that makes stuff, right? That's one. That's a big industry. Heavy equipment companies like a Caterpillar, they have assets in the field. And if they break in a mine or something, that's going to cost a very, it is going to be expensive, right? So heavy equipment, we are looking at oil and gas. This has its own challenges because they're generally remote. So how do you get connectivity? Well, we have partnerships, joint partnerships with companies like SkySense that do that. And then automotive, that's another big play. So you can't be, you know, you can't service all industries, right? You have to kind of focus on specific industries. You can't be everything to everybody. So our joint solution can work for many industries, but I think we're focused on a top five or so. We're getting some outliers like comes like elevators, right? Very complex assets. Qualifying definitely for the solution, but it's more complicated. I don't know if you know, but an elevator has over 1,000 points that need to be measured. 1,000.
Wow. Oh my God.
Data points. Yeah. That to me is like, okay, so that gets more complicated. And that's where you need a different type of expertise. But our industry, I think the top five is kind of qualified. So yeah, I think that's what we're looking at going after. And it's a big market in and of itself.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I guess, as we said, the market, even at an early stage, I guess it'll develop over time. It'll be clear which markets are more leading than others. So maybe it's difficult to pinpoint that exactly at this stage. But yeah, there's some early indications, yeah, I guess, from what you were saying.
Yeah. And the thing is that we did, there's a lot of analysis that we jointly did. Specific industries may have a lot of hours downtime, but the cost per hour is not as high. Well, oil and gas, I think it was like 400,000 an hour or something like that. It's extremely high, right? So we see different industries where they have lower downtime, the meaning uptime is higher, but if they're down, it adds up quickly. I mean, $430,000 an hour, if it's 8 hours, that's a lot of money, right? So there are some industries that would definitely benefit from it. If the cost per hour downtime is extremely high, this is definitely a solution for them. So it's, yeah, we'll need to find out how the market's going to respond and which markets respond quicker, but there's definitely different interest.
Yeah, and there's, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's no doubt about that. So as we sort of come to the end, it's been a really interesting conversation, I have to say, and I've learned a lot too. But what I wanted to end on is, again, it's a sort of a crystal ball moment. And I ask guests of this, whether it's about Industry 4.0, whether it's digital transformation, whether it's Industry 5.0. But we're going to focus on what's coming up in equipment as a service. What do you see? I mean, we're still at the beginning of that journey, I guess, as a market, as we've been saying. But what if we're looking beyond that, where can this lead to? What other technologies can this include and incorporate? I can think of a few, talking about augmented reality or, I don't know, just throwing one out there, but I'd be interested in your thoughts, Rob.
Yeah. Yeah, so kind of interesting that you bring that up. So we're working with another company. What they do, they have AR, VR type functionality, augmented reality, virtual reality. And they are able to bring in from different data sources, data that can be projected on those goggles, right? You know, those AR goggles. So for a repair job, the person who does the repair, they can pull data from maybe a service solution, from an ERP, they can look the manuals and they can check the status of the asset and actually what was the last time it was repaired, what cases are open, what is a recurring challenge that they have, even to the point where, you know, those heat maps, right, where it's red, it's a problem, it's green, it's fine, yellow, it's not an issue. We're looking to experiment with that, where the service rep looks at an asset. And with those goggles, they can see this ball bearing is a problem because it's red hot, right? This is fine, it's green. We can do that because there's these data layers that you can now bring together. So that's going to be a very different type of experience for the service reps. And they're going to be much more effective, right? So that's the type of functionality that we're looking into as part of a partnership, right? We're not developing ourselves, it doesn't make sense. So Quantum Interface is that partner, and I think it's going to enhance our solution. So think about it this way. The asset looks to fail, right? There's a predictive failure there. It feeds through our process. The shipment gets sent, the parts gets there, the rep gets there. They put their goggles on and they're able to bring in the information onto the goggles. They can customize the menu that they look at on the goggles. Because field reps have the tendency, they know generally what the problem is with those assets. They don't necessarily have to be told, but they can, they understand what the issue is. So, but this augments what their knowledge, the knowledge they already have. And now suddenly they have this whole experience where this whole process is flawless, and then they have the goggles and they can say, okay, here's the problem. I think that's a really interesting process, and it's going to be something that's going to change the market. Crystal ball wise, EAS a year ago was more of a, what is it? What are we talking about? We now have conversations with, okay, we're going to look for an EAS solution. What does it do, right? And how can it help our business? And so we see a change in market. We see it and it's happening. So I think 5 from 10 years from now, if you're not EAS specific or you don't have EAS capabilities, you may be losing out on the market.
Yeah. And that's quite a... That's
and you're
going
to lose your competitive edge.
Yeah. I was just going to say that that's quite a stark way to finish, isn't it, as a... as a as an end point to the interview. But it's true. It's absolutely true. It's like any business, you stop and stand still. You didn't even mention about endowments. You know, you stop and stand still and competitors or whatever will come behind you. But it's the same for manufacturers, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what we see and that's what companies see. It's just that they don't know how to execute, and that's maybe one of the last things we talk about. But there's questions. So how do I do this, right? What does it do? I mean, if you kind of understand the concept, then how do I get there? Because then they get, potentially get, you get, companies could get anxious or leadership get anxious. Okay, if we don't do this, I'm going to be dead in the water. But if you don't know how to get there, it's like, oh, okay, well, I need help. And that's where we come in, Sensei Endowments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, just as we sort of close off, Rob, I think it'd be good just to summarize how people can find out more about Endowments, you know, which channels, which, you know, where should they go to find out more about, and the joint solution, I guess.
Yeah. So both our websites, we have endowments.com and sensei.io. A lot of information is there. We have dedicated sales teams to talk to IoT. I talk about concepts, can explain how it works. We can do demos. We have all that set up together. So, yeah, it's a matter of reaching out, and we're here to service and explain and educate anyone who wants to know about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, so no, it's been, again, really fascinating talk. Yeah, I'd like to thank you, Percy, Rob, for coming on and chatting this afternoon. Always good to chat. We know each other very well these days, but even like I said, I've learned a lot even about Endowments' beginnings as well, so that's been really nice to learn about that. But besides that, I think yeah, thank you again, and for the listeners, speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Nero, for setting it up, and we'll talk soon again.
Great.
Thank you.
So that was the third and final part of our series looking at the rise of equipment as a service. I hope you enjoyed it. Please subscribe via your favourite podcast provider if you'd like to be notified about future series, and let us know your feedback by leaving us a review. You can find out more about how Sensei can reduce unplanned downtime and contribute towards improved sustainability within your manufacturing plants by visiting sensei.io. Thanks a lot for listening.